You've had seconds, you're going for thirds. I know his appetite. I had him at my place. All right, I'm going to speak at about that volume, so if you can't hear me, there are seats up here. Tiny can hear me. Having a good chat with Tiny. We discovered we went to the same high school, Marsden High School, West Ryde. I grew up in Eastwood in Sydney. And Steve, you went to Eastwood Primary School.
Yes.
Is that the story?
Yep.
We might have overlapped there.
Spooky,
isn't
it? It is spooky.
Yeah. Anyway, we've moved, since I've been married, we've moved 28 times. So finally settled in Canberra. Good memories of Canberra. But I'm not talking about moving. Left school having done well in some subjects and not really well in other subjects. I did well in subjects where you didn't have to read anything. I wasn't very good at remembering things. So mathematics and logic were strong. So when I left school, I got a job as a computer programmer. And I didn't know what that meant. Nobody else knew what that meant. My father went down to the local bookshop and asked for a book on data processing. The person looked at him, went out, they were scurrying around, came out with a book on tomato processing, which really didn't help the cause at all. But that was back in, I left school in 64, so that's 1965. Job with NCR, National Cash Register, NCR, making mainframe computers at that stage. And just to put some context, watching Stephen play with his laptop, which is very excellent software he's organised. In those days, computer memory was made up, because we didn't have silicon chips, was made up of a matrix of very fine wires, and at the intersection of each of those was a little ferrite donut-shaped core. Mm-hmm. And you'd send currents down to magnetise one way or the other. And that was one bit, binary, either zero or one. Get 10 of those in a row, and you've got room for a byte. So memory was very expensive, very limited, and it was fun being in the computer industry, watching everything change at a rapid rate. Not here to talk about that, because after 18 years in the computer industry, God had other plans, and I went into theological college and became a Baptist minister. My talk is going to be pretty much some stories I'm going to tell you, and I'll just tell you the first story to introduce the theme. So by this time I'm done my training, I'm pastoring a church, I think it was probably the second church, at Camden in southwest Sydney, Camden Baptist. Phone rings at 10 o'clock at night next to my bed, because I'm a young pastor, I think I'm indispensable. All young pastors think they're indispensable. This was before mobile phones. So I pick up the phone, didn't know the voice at the other end. He said, I was wanting to talk to somebody from a church. I got the phone book. Remember phone books? I got the phone book. A, Anglican. No answer. B, Baptist. And you picked up the phone. I said, okay, how can I help you? He said, I've come home and the house is empty. My wife's gone. Everything's gone. All there is the seat I'm sitting on and the phone. I'm sitting on a chair. I've got a phone in one hand and I've got a gun in the other. When I finish with that one, I'm going to use the other one. That focused my attention. Can't remember dealing with that at theological college. So, what do you do? Well, you listen. He wasn't going to give me his name. He wasn't going to give me an address where he was. He was just wanted to talk. So I'm listening, and then yeah, that ear gets too hot, and so you use that ear, and that ear gets too hot. So, eventually this went on for I don't know how long until he said, I think I'm done talking, and he hung up. I didn't sleep very well, but next morning, called from the police. The police said a fellow came in last night, handed himself in and a gun in. He wanted us to ring you to say thank you for listening. So my theme is listening. And I guess I called that the man with the gun. listening when you're the only set of ears. And there are times in life when a person, and might be a guy with a gun, but might be a person, might be a stranger, it might be a family member, it might be the person closest to you, or a colleague, might be somebody in your church, and they need someone to listen right then and there. And I guess it takes discernment to know this is one of those moments where nothing else is important except listening to you, whatever it is you've got and you want to talk about. So, first story, listening when you're the only set of ears. Second story, and this goes back about 6 years ago, I was a Baptist minister, so we call them interims, like they call them locums in Anglicans, and anyway, you get the idea. I was filling in between pastors at an inner city church in Sydney. apparently within that church, quite a few years earlier, I mean historically earlier, some serious abuse had taken place. A young woman had been abused by one of the pastoral team. The person who did the abusing was now dead, so that's how historical it was. But these are the days, now that I'm at this church, when the redress scheme is starting to kick in. Now, you read about that, and you might have had something to do with it if you're in church life or any institutional life, but people who've suffered abuse at the hands of representatives of an institution, and how can healing move forward, and so on and so forth. And yes, money's involved, but money never really does the healing part. Anyway, there was this woman who'd been abused in that church, and she was moving through the redress scheme, and a part of the healing was for representatives of that institution where it had taken place to listen. Okay, so I had the phone call, are you available? You're the pastor at the moment of that church. Obviously I had nothing to do with, nor even knew or was anywhere near the church when this took place. But myself and an elder of the church made ourselves available pretty much for a whole day, actually. And it took place in a regional town in New South Wales. So this woman, now a middle-aged woman, she had a friend with her, there was a mediator. And the day was to take place, the mediator said, not to go through and discern, well, why didn't you do this? Couldn't this have happened? It's nothing to do with that. You just listen. I said, yeah, I can do that. So we went and we just listened. Terrible story. And I think the worst part of the... No, it's not the worst part of the story. Being abused is the worst part of the story. But pretty close to it is when it happened, no one would believe her. And so she went to the senior pastor, who wasn't the perpetrator, and, you know, that pastor, no, he wouldn't do that. Washed over. She went to her parents and told her parents, well, it might be true, but we're not going to rock the boat, because you don't do that. And so I just felt the pain of this. She would have been a teenage girl, having been so badly abused, and no one had listened to her. So this is the day we're there to listen. And we're representatives of the church. One of the ladies in the church said, maybe she needs to tell her story to ladies. And the person said, no, I need to tell it to men. So two men went and listened. And so we listened and listened, and she finished the story. And then what do you say? We said, well, that is awful. That is terrible. It should not have happened. And it was not your fault. She needed to hear that. And so we listened. I don't know if that... I'm pretty sure it moved her along a bit in the healing process. So that second story, listening when someone needs to be heard and affirmed. It won't happen every day, but sometimes, well, maybe it will happen that a person trusts you enough to share something, to say, I need to share something with you that, well, I don't know, it's hurting. Listening. I'll swap these two around. Next two. When I was in pastoral ministry full time, we used to have what we called pastoral retreats. So a fellow called Doug Southern, who's now up at Erina Church, well retired. A pastoral retreat in what had been instituted was about 10 pastors go away for Monday through Friday. And yes, within that retreat, the day would start with some devotions, we'd have some prayer time and so on. But mainly we were there just to listen. And so to tell our story. And so we'd gather, and maybe by mid-morning we gathered as we are here, about 10 of us. One guy would say, can I have some time? Yep, okay. So we just listen. And that guy would tell his story. He might go for half an hour and a half, 2 hours. He might just tell it. And he'd remember things, and he'd talk about what's happening now and what's unresolved. The idea is not to fix his problems. We're men, we like to fix problems. And sometimes we get to the end of it and say, well, and the facilitator would say, well, you mentioned that. Did you want to do something about that? Yes, no. Well, if yes, what do you want to do? All right, next time we meet, because you'd meet annually, so the same group would meet for 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, and then divide and multiply sort of thing. So yes, if there was something the guy wanted to take on and resolve, then he took responsibility for that, and he'd come back and, I won't say we held him accountable, we'd say, well, how'd that go? So listening in that situation, one of the important rules was when a guy started to share his story, you didn't, yeah, that happened to me. I had a friend who used to, you know, we do that, don't we? No, you just shut up. And particularly the greenies who are starting off in this process are listening to somebody tell their story. We're sort of trying to butt in the facilitator to say, your turn will come. So just button it up and just listen to the person. Give them the space. I'll say it's very rare, it's very, very rare that you get just to tell your story and to be listened to for as long as it takes. Most of us don't have 2 hours to sit and listen to somebody. You say, can we get to the end of it? I was saying that to somebody yesterday in a Bible study group. Can you get to the end of it? Anyway. But in this setting, you take as long as you need. And not to be interrupted. There's a few occasions outside of that setting where I've been able to either offer that or be a part of a group where you say, as long as it takes, just tell us your story and just listen. So I've called that one listening without interruption. Not an easy thing to do, and that's not the sort of listening we do all the time, but there are times when a person needs to tell without being interrupted. The fourth one of this little group of stories has to do with prisons. You've got a friend who's still in the prison system as a...
No, he's retired, yeah.
Retired, okay. Kairos is one of a number of ministries into prisons, and I've been involved in Kairos in Sydney, and now, having come to Canberra, I heard it, and I said, yeah, I'll put my hand up again for Kairos. So Alexander McConachie Prison up in Canberra, and we've done a few of those. Well, I've joined the team, and we've done a few in the last few years. Just to outline how it works, the team that goes in would be a team about this size of men. We would, for about 4 or 5 Saturdays, do preparation. So it's not something you just put your hand up and say, yeah, I'll have a go at that. Well, you're prepared to do the hard work of preparing as a team, bonding, practicing, whatever it takes. So you do your preparation, and then as a team you go into the prison. One of the things that really attracts me about Kairos is you've got a group of men like this, and he's Pentecostal, he's Anglican, he's Catholic, he's Coptic, he's, you know, come from all traditions of the church. All of that's invisible. All you're doing is bringing the gospel to guys, and the motto of Kairos is listen, listen, love, love. So you go in to the prison with that in mind. The format of the 4 days that we're in prison, guys will get up and give talks, maybe 10, 15 minute talks. Then the inmates, and there's usually a queue to get in to be a part of the course. They'll have a chat about what was just said. They'll do some posters. There's also some singing. There's nothing like the singing of men in prison. I guess this is a chance to be free. But they belt it out. And they know the Christian songs. Because some of these guys have church backgrounds. Guy I met last time been through a Christian school. What's he doing in prison? Well, he made a mistake or two. So there's some devotional stuff. There's a healing forgiveness ceremony that we take place. So all this happens. And a lot of just socialising, a bit like you were doing over breakfast this morning, just listening to these guys. There's a couple of rules when you're listening to the inmates. You don't ask them what they're in for. You don't ask them what they're in for. They'll probably tell you, though some of them will. And the second rule is, if they say to you, yeah, they got me for A, B and C, but what they didn't know is I did, stop, don't talk about that. Because if you start talking about that, I've got to tell somebody and you're going to be deep somewhere. So they're the simple rules. But apart from that, these guys are listened to. Now, it's quite inevitable. When you first walk in on the Friday, the guys are, yeah, don't know you. What do you want from us? Who's paying you? Over the next few days, they discover nobody's paying us anything. In fact, we had to pay to get to where we are. And so it's not transactional. We're just there. So I guess that's the first practical demonstration of grace that some of these guys have come across, because in prison, everything's transactional. You do something, I do something. You do something, I do something. And so we come in and we do something and we don't expect anything back. We're not asking anything back. So yeah, the stuff looks like this, and second day it's like this, and then third day you're getting hugs, and it's like you've known these guys all their life. And you're presenting the fact that, yeah, God loves you. Yeah? That's a hard message for some of these guys to hear. But it's probably, Kairos is probably one of the most satisfying, rewarding ministries that I've had a chance to be part of. So listening, just listening to guys whose identity and self-worth has taken a bit of a tumble. And so to know that, yeah, you're a human being, you've made some bad mistakes, and you know, one of the very first talk they hear is the talk choices. So yeah, guess why you're in here? Because you made a bad choice, or two, or three. And yes, you were easily led, and there's other talks, and a number of talks about there's a God who loves you. So listening to people whose self-worth and identity are damaged. And I guess the common thread in all of that is one of the points of listening, when you listen to somebody, you are giving them a sense of worth. The fact that you've made time, you're paying attention, perhaps you're responding and feeding back to them what you're hearing. I said earlier that as guys we like to fix things. And I was thinking about this yesterday. Actually, listening can be the thing that fixes. We think of listening as a means to an end. All right, I've heard your problem, now here's my solution. Maybe we can do this. Sometimes it's just the listening. A bit like that abused lady. Just the listening is a very great part of the fixing of the problem. So don't undervalue the role of being a good, attentive listener. Because oftentimes, we don't know what's going on in the other person, but oftentimes just that listening helps them to let go, to be released, to get clarity, to know that they're worth something. I prayed this morning as I was lying in bed, waiting for the sun to get up. It was a warm bed too. There's a God of the universe who's listening to me. I mean, he's busy, he's got things to do, but he's listening to me. And it gives me a self-worth to know that God listens to me. I have a computer background. I like logic. Prayer is not logical, I sometimes say. I'm telling God stuff he knows. I'm asking God to do good stuff. He is a perfect good God. How come I give him advice as to what to do? So, yeah, prayer is not logical. God says, yeah, but do it anyway, because I'm your Father. And so I pray. And in fact, I'm praying more now than I ever did, I think. I found on my bookshelf a book I thought I'd thrown away by Hugh Mackay. It's an old book called Why Don't People Listen? Good book, actually. And I'm rereading it. I've just about finished it again. And post-cataract operation, I'll get my glasses out at this stage. And I'm going to finish with these 3 points, because Hugh Mackay says, good listeners need, okay, here are 3 things. Good listeners need, number one, courage. And this is quoting Hugh. He says, when we listen, we run the risk of finding out that we were wrong. We move outside the comfort and security of our own cage. He talks about us having a value system. That's the cage we live in. We move outside the comfort and security of our own cage in order to see for ourselves how things look from inside the cage of another. So courage. He quotes Carl Rogers, if you're willing to enter the private world of another person and see how life appears to him without any attempt to make evaluative judgments, you run the risk of being changed yourself. End of that quote is, the risk of being changed is one of the most frightening prospects most of us can face. Well, if you're a Baptist, maybe there. And now I'm an Anglican. Who knew? Well, the first time I preached up at the Anglican church, I was said to the pastor, you're going on holidays, you might come back and find Baptist written up on the top. Courage, second, generosity. Generosity, he says, if you're going to be a good listener. Because we are offering the other person the gift of acceptance, even if not agreement. The gift of taking that other person seriously. That's important. When you're listening, you're not saying, yeah, okay, I'm hearing the words. Taking that person seriously. I mean, this person is sharing something of themselves, maybe. It might be quite deep. And it's important to them. And you're taking it seriously. You're not necessarily agreeing with them. And he says, more than that, you join with the other person in the task of concentrating and perhaps clarifying their point of view and their opinions and their attitudes. Nothing is more reassuring than to be listened to in an attentive way. I didn't underline that, but I perhaps could have. Nothing is more reassuring than to be listened to in an attentive way. Some of you guys are married. I am. There are times when I know listening time, and I just listen to her. Just listen. Don't have to give necessarily an opinion. Might be ignored anyway, but I don't necessarily give an opinion. Because she needs to be listened to. My wife likes to talk stuff through. And I'm happy, more than happy to listen. And to reassure. Nothing more reassuring than to be listened to in an attentive way. And it might be a child, it might be a partner, a friend, a colleague. And the third one is patience. He says, impatience is one of the great barriers to listening. If we're going to listen to other people, we need to do reserves of patience, which will allow us to hear them out, rather than rushing in with statements of our own. I made that comment earlier on. And then I finished off with this statement. In relationships, people are more likely to listen to us if we listen to them, because attentive listening conveys an affirmation of worth. And that's all I wanted to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Terrible puns about listening or not listening or what I've been doing throughout the talk. But I'm wondering if there are any questions, any comments based on what we've just listened to?
Just a little bit more information about Kairos. Do you do 4 days in a row? How does that work?
The course inside?
Yes.
Yes. You don't stay at night. quick funny story from my left. We're in there, I think it was the last course we did. And they give you, you've got a little device that tells you if you've fallen over, yeah? Okay, well they give you little alarms because they want to protect you while you're in there. So you strap these to your belt. The theory being that if you're that way instead of that way, there might be a problem. So, you know, you might have come into grief with some of the inmates there. So, okay. Duress alarm, that's the word. Duress alarm. Put them on your belt, where's the Miranda way in there? So this guy, we've done our day and we're about to move out, we're heading up to the gate to go out, and he takes his duress alarm out and holds it in his hand. Horizontally. Yeah. Officers appearing for all directions. Now, what's going on? I've taken my duress alarm and holding it horizontally. Please don't do that. That says that you're lying on the ground and that's not the way you need to be. Lesson number one about duress alarm. So yeah, we're in there for 4 days. The training takes place over not consecutive Saturdays, but maybe every second Sunday for a couple of months. And then we go in typically on the Friday midday early afternoon through till Monday afternoon. Yeah. Have you talked with people about Kairos before you go up? Yeah.
Is it operating through Coomadale?
I don't believe so.
Okay. Just curious.
I don't believe so. And we were going to have one this year at Alexander McConaughey, but mm-hmm. they're doing work on the prison, so
right.
That's going to happen in May next year, as far as I know.
Right.
I think there's a hand up here.
Yes, secondary.
When you're talking about the prison ministry, I'm reminded of what James says, call the elder, confess your sins to one another, and to paraphrase the confession to one another, the elder to the parishioner to the elder, will make the sick person well. And so when you say, and I appreciate there may be legal reasons, but a prisoner comes to you and says, I'm in here for this, but I've done this and this and this, and you say, no, I'm not going to listen, because for legal reasons I'm not going to listen. So I'm reminded of a local church that I went to recently where soon after I came to the church, a man died in a motorcycle accident, and his widow was... they were very keen to listen to her when it comes to how much she was grieving and how bad her life was, but when it came for her to confess that she had murdered her to his two children in the womb before he was blotted out from under the sun by a motorcycle accident, all of a sudden they weren't keen to listen. They were keen to show some surface level false empathy, that when she wanted to say how terrible her life was, how much anxiety she had, how much stress she had, but when she actually wanted to confess her sin of murder, they weren't willing to listen to her.
It wasn't murder though, was it?
It was murder by abortion.
I see. Okay. When you put a comma at the end of what I was saying, you don't tell me, but you can tell the chaplain. In other words, there are people you can tell, and you can tell safely. So yes, you can tell your chaplain, or if you're not a religious person, you can tell your legal advisor. So there are people you can talk to, but if you talk to us, we're legally required to convey that on. So
yeah,
beware of it. And maybe you do want to say
that with what the Bible says.
What's that?
For example, in James chapter 9, or other places. Where
Again, let's say you're the person. Say I've done drugs that didn't catch me. I say, if this conversation goes on, I'm going to have to tell you. Tell somebody about it. Now you might say, well, I'm happy to talk about it.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
You do that now. The disclosure has been explained. You can tell me, but I'll be telling somebody else.
Yes.
So I will listen to you, but be aware that by listening to you, I'm now duty bound to tell the authorities what you've just told me.
What do you think of that configuration in the light of the Word of God?
I don't have a problem with that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Second story is about the abuse lady.
Yeah.
What was the end story? The four points about listening and Valley and other people. And how did this story end?
How did her story end, or?
Yeah, he said it was kind of like a healing process in the end. Kind of
well, I think we're.
What happened?
The part of that is we don't know how that story ends because our part was to be there for that day.
Oh, that's for the one day.
Yeah.
Oh.
So we weren't a part of travelling with her. We were a part of representing the institution where it had taken place, listening to her, validating her story and saying, yes, it did happen, yes, it wasn't your fault. And so she could say, I've been listened to by people, at least who represent that institution.
And that was it?
I think her healing will keep going.
Right.
All the way through. I say this because I know somebody who has been badly abused and it just doesn't go away. So all that does is just help you move a step further forward. Some people, maybe the healing can take place totally. God can heal all things. But I think for a lot of people, it just re-emerges and you're damaged in different ways that are hard to understand. So, but that was our role and that's all we could do.
It was one day for us to listen.
One day for us to listen. That was a part of this. I mean, a whole lot of other stuff perhaps in the redress process, but that step in the redress process was for us to listen on that day to her and to affirm, yes, we believe you. Because she hadn't been believed. We believe that this happened. And it was wrong. And it wasn't your fault. And so on and so forth. Yeah.
Well, thank you for giving us something to listen to, and something I think we can all take. You've said that, amongst other things, you know, the importance of listening to people, but also the importance of that in introducing, if you like, a two-way conversation where you can talk about where you know, we have an important message to share, and if we're not prepared to listen to other people, then it will be very hard for them to listen to us. And I'm sure we've found that in so many situations. And so why don't we just pray quietly for a moment to the God who listens?
and then we can I think we can leave the tables out. I don't think we've got any
tables. Leave two tables out.
For what's happening this afternoon?
This is for...
Okay, two tables out, so that'll be about...
I had a call from
Hoodie. Okay, cool. Two tables, cool. The rest can we move the remaining, so three chairs on each side of each table. And the others go back and the other tables go up the side there. I think Bernie's done a great job in the kitchen. You might go and double, someone will need to check that he's done that. But take some time to continue the fellowship, to bless each other, to listen to each other's stories, which I guess means being willing to share your own as well, as appropriate. But let me pray. In fact, let's pray silently for a while, and then I will pray to close.